variation of fundamental constants using quasar absorption lines. So basically these are my collaborators at different stages, and you heard about Hung Chan. Actually he was my thesis student who worked on this subject in the beginning. Patrick Petitjean and Bastien Russell, these are the people who are involved in our project on determining alpha constraining variation of mass structure constant. I also see Cedric Ledoux. With Cedric Ledoux and Patrick Petitjean, for the past 8 years or so, we have been involved in a big survey of molecular hydrogen. And whatever you are going to hear, most of the discussions on detections of molecular hydrogen of variations of mu came out of the survey which we have been conducting for the last 10 years. Recently, you know that India has a very, very good radio telescope. So with my another student, Niraj Gupta, he has started a big survey of 31 centimeter observers at redshift above 1. This has resulted in huge number of absorption systems, 31 centimeter detections. So Niraj is basically involved in projects related to 31 centimeter absorbers. Eventually, we will be using these absorption systems to place interesting constraints on mu at a redshift of interest to all of you. It's between 1 and 1.5. Ruski is the new student who is working with Patrick. He is now in charge of our ongoing molecular hydrogen survey. In fact, we have ended up detecting other molecules. First of all, we have two detections of Hg, deuterium rated hydrogen, at redshift around 2.5. And we have also detections of CO at around redshift 2.5. Hd is directly usable for mu variation, so we are in the process of acquiring better data so that you will have completely independent constraint using completely different transitions which will be there. Alexander and Dimitri, these people are using our molecular lines to place constraints on electron to proton mass ratio. You will hear from Alexander tomorrow on some of these results. What am I going to do in this talk? Basically, I'm going to discuss these things. Mainly, we'll concentrate on this part of it because we already have 1 hour of talk. So I'm not sure, like, this talk was prepared assuming that I think I'm going to give a see if it's a fresh talk. So you'll get a lot of overlap between the way one is going to look at absorption lines. And it's very important I'm from an institute where I'm the only astronomer. All other people are theoreticians. You know this institute. This is like Inter-University Center for Astronomy and Astrophysics, known for people working in dark energy and other things. So all my talks end up telling them what are the basic ideas and how one looks at the quasar spectrum in a simple way. So I may be spending quite a bit of time on that. If you feel it's all too much, you just tell me. I can skip and go to the issues directly. Because it's important that when you address a problem, one should be open to different ways of looking at the issue itself. And that is when a field like this, which is extremely young and narrow, only when you allow for different kinds of thinkings, different kind of approach, you are going to converge on to a result which is as important as variation of fundamental constants without any ambiguity. It's utmost important. It's a democratic process. It's important to view, look at the issues on its own. So my approach of doing these things are slightly different from what you heard. Maybe dramatically different from what you hear in the last lecture. So I will spend a bit of time on this. I will spend a bit of time, very little time, maybe 2 to 3 minutes, because depending upon how much time I have, on these issues and this stuff. This is for future, with existing telescope. Future meaning not 2 years. You are going to address these things in 6 months to 1 year's time scale. So you are going to expect some few results, interesting results from us. These pictures, you looked at it, so this is, I didn't scan the picture. This is my own picture of how the quasar absorption lines look like. Since you know now from what these things are, I'm going to skip. The main basic idea here is that the main advance in this field was due to this work by De Zuba and Victor Flambaum et al. They showed that one can absorption line seen in any spectrum is you can find out different set of lines. Certain things are very sensitive to the small variations. Certain things which are not very sensitive to the variations of these constants, which we heard about. So the guys which are not sensitive, the idea is very simple. You are going to look at objects at cosmological distances, means that you are not going to observe them at the rest level. each and every absorption line is going to be shifted by 1 plus z. If you look at the standard linear theory, we know that if you just say what is the dependence on alpha, it is a multiplicative constant. So unless otherwise you have corrections, any shift you are going to expect from the variation of alpha will be in, will be degenerate with respect to the redshift itself. So this was a pathbreaking discovery, I would say, to identify that the higher order corrections are very important, and that allows you to say that if somehow you get the redshift of the system accurately, somehow, if somebody tells you this is the redshift, then any differential variation of line centers of some of the ions with respect to that redshift will allow you to measure what is the variation of alpha. So it's very simple, conceptually very simple idea. So you know some lines which are called anchors, you use them to get redshift. This is another simulation. Simple simulation. What we have done is that we have simulated Bessar spectrum without any shift. We're using laboratory wavelength of alpha, assuming redshift is 1. You assume that the value changed by plus 10 to the power 4, 10 to the minus 4, and you assume that another side is going as negative direction. This is basically restating the same statement which you heard several times in the day. Look at the magnesium doublet. You are supposed to see three lines. One is black, another is blue, another is red. You don't see it, even when you change it by 10 to the power minus 4. So it's obvious, and just put the scale for this picture. This horizontal line corresponds to 0.25 angstrom. Really, these are not shifting. Even when you change alpha by a factor of 1 part in 10 to the fourth, you don't see this magnesium changing at all. Whereas you nicely see, in the case of ion lines, there is nice splitting between these three things. So it's obvious. This is what is the proposal. It's obvious that you go and find magnesium line. Magnesium will define your redshift. Look at the shift on top of this redshift. You are going to find if there is any variation in alpha or not. It's very interesting. This figure is very interesting to look at. Here it's nice, right? This same thing is shifted nicely here. You see the same thing is shifted nicely here. The profiles are well defined. You go to the weaker transitions. These are the weaker transitions. You can just see that, okay, there is a shift, but it is jumbled with the fluctuations. So one has to be careful. Even though your ability to find out where is the line centroid is going to depend very much on how well the profile is defined. Even then, one is using Gaussian profiles, simple Gaussian profiles. Okay, this is where we started with. Actually, this analysis was there in 2003. This has been shown. These are the individual measurements. I replotted it in a different way because you can just visualize what is this thing. This is zero line, right? If zero is the no variation of constant, you are supposed to have points lying above and below, or lying around this red line. Whereas what you measure is this blue line. This is what you have to remember. This is measured, as Michael explained. It is measured with the statistics of 1 hour, giving 1 hour sigma square weightage for the measurements. So what is obvious from here is that from the simulation it was very easy. You see that you will be able to, having good magnesium systems and having quite a handful of iron systems, you will be able to precisely measure these constants, right? If there is a variation in constants. But it's clear from this figure that if you look at, this is the kind of measurement one is looking at, we are not going to measure with one system, right? This is the point we have to be careful about. We are going to measure it in a statistical way. We are going to have a large number of points, and we are going to say that, okay, we are looking at the points as much as possible and try to do some statistics. This is important. Again, I will come back to this. So what is in reality? What we did was, when the student joined me, the first thing we looked at, there are 140 points measurements available in these from KIC data. Can one look at it and see like what kind of things one has to understand? So that if you want to go for a new analysis, how you will proceed with it. What one realizes is that the expected variations are going to be very small. So you are not going to derive direct detections using one system. So you are going to basically do it in statistics. The second point is that in general, absorption profiles are very complex. So the point is that in a single absorption line is well defined with three parameters, you say: column density, velocity dispersion, and the redshift of the quantity. Provided these components are well separated. Usually you have additional component, which which is what is known as number of absorption individual component, which again you saw from Michael, very nice plot which shows 30 components or 25 components nicely arranged. So if you get nicely arranged components, your ability to do them is good. But most of the time, the profiles become very complex. That means there are degeneracies exist between various parameters. This you have to keep remembering. It is not that you are dealing with absorption lines which are pristine and look like what we get in the simulations. So one has to expect various kind of systematics in your analysis. You have to be prepared for systematics. Okay? So I will, first of all, what I will do is that I will try to quantify or whatever.
So I have nine questions. Is the main source of error photon noise?
If you take only one spectrum, in an ideal situation, in the continuum, it is dominated mainly by photon noise.
If it's just photon noise, then if I just take this one quasar and observe it like 100 times longer, then it should give me a set of 100 quasars. If I just take one spectrum and observe it 100 times longer, they should get the same error as 100 quasars. So,
naively you would think so, but it depends. This is why I said that it's important to see that what are the systematics. Because see, actually, if you think of simple Gaussian, you don't require very high signal to noise. Because you are approximating a profile to a Gaussian. Your accuracy to decide what is the centroid is much more than the pixel size, because you are giving a functional quantity. So in this exercise, signal to noise is not important, as long as you define the functional form.
So
you know this.
Systematics is started affect that photon noise.
Maybe one has to worry about that. So this is what I would say, that it's better if you can minimize systematics as much as possible in the analysis itself, before starting the analysis itself. So how do you do it? So one has to see that we have come up with some plans. I will go through this exercise. Some of them are not published, some of them. Few things I am going to do is using whatever existing measurements by measurement using KIP data itself. So that will give us some idea of what kind of systematic to expect. I mean, this has not been, this will be interesting thing to look at. So typically you saw some fantastic spectra before, and you can also see these are the typical spectra. This is from, again, from Murphy et al. 2003. And these are the kind of things you are going to deal with. What are these? You see, these are completely zero kind of saturated lines. So in reality, if you the problem is very simple. If you want strong iron lines, strong magnesium line, if you pick a system which is very strong, you end up eating up all the photons which are going to pass through it. Now our task is no more simple. It is not that our task is that we can define what is the redshift of the system looking at magnesium absorber. Yes, you can do, provided the magnesium absorption is very simple. If you look at this magnesium absorption, you are going to define four or five components using this magnesium 2 absorption line. But you know that already. It's very, very tricky job. So one has to worry about the fact that I would think that this kind of systems, one has to be careful. This is saturated absorption lines spread over, if one is going to say 5 components are there, it's going to be difficult. Of course, you will be able to do it if there is a line which is unsaturated. But if you say that I'm going to use a line which is unsaturated to get the redshift, as well as this line is what is going to shift me, is what is going to provide me the handle on alpha, you are in trouble. But ideally, how you smooth this, what is the argument you can give? You can say that you can do this idea, that this is a component fitting. Don't put your head into it. Just fit it blindly. Meaning, like you give a prescription, keep on adding the number of components, right? And say that you keep minimizing the price curve, then one can do it. But when we started the analysis, we would like to take an approach that at least there are people who can do this, but we cannot do this. Because we are not that good at least discovering several components in such saturated systems. So this is one point which is important. If you want to be unbiased, at least you have to do with it.
Blind analysis is usually called unbiased, so I'm not sure the word blindly is a good choice. I mean, maybe you like to be blind, in the sense that if you look too closely at your data while you're fitting.
No, I think one is not going to look too closely at any of the data, but it is set procedure. In fact, if you ask me as an astronomer, what are the parameters you are looking at? So we're looking at color density, B, right, velocity dispersion, and redshift. I know that even in astronomical standards, people don't use saturated lines to get color densities, where you can allow for an error of order of magnitude. I'm saying that I'm a classical astronomer. If I can't measure color density from a saturated line, I would prefer not to measure alpha with it. But maybe I'm biased. You can say I'm blind. Okay, so the second point I want to mention, it's very important, is that we are not doing a measurement like a measurement which one does in a typical experiment. You have an experiment, you perform the experiment, and it's a controlled experiment. Then you say that you give it to another guy, he performs a controlled experiment. Then one can say that if the biases are very minimum, then you expect that the two measurements should match. And you can get the feeling of how these measurements are going to be by again looking at some 150 measurements done by Murphy et al. In these things. Fortunately for us, to get a handle on what kind of errors one will have, there are five systems in this table which are measured by Keck in two different times, and the measurement are performed in two different times. It's the same systems, same telescope. There are minor differences. What are the minor differences? The signal to noise is slightly different. It's observed by different people. One or two additional lines are there or not there. These are the differences. And these are the five measurements. You can look at it in table 3 from here. It's obvious that if you look at the values which you see from one measurement to another measurement.
What is this value for?
This is the value extracted by.
But for what? For what value?
Delta alpha by alpha in units of 10 to the minus 5.
Okay.
Measured for this system, there are two measurements that are performed by the same group, the same object, same systems. And this is important. Why I'm saying, this is very important to realize, these are not identical systems in the following way. It's not the same spectrum analyzed twice. No. These are spectra obtained from the same telescope, but two different times. Because it's, in one case, you may have an additional line which is included into it. For example, magnesium 1 may not be in one. You add magnesium 1 into the other thing. In some cases, the signal to noise is slightly different. It's why I'm showing this. It's very important to realize that it's not that you are going to get exact values even when you are doing the robust chi-square minimization procedure. Why is this? This is very, very important to realize this. These errors are very different. Errors are not going to be same. Errors are very different. There are cases where you have nice overlap within one sigma. There are cases where you do not overlap even at one sigma level. So it's important that these errors one is quoting for given systems is going to be very dicey. So if I'm looking at this number, if I said that, okay, ideally this is done by same group, the values should be identical, one can see that one can have a leverage. You should actually have a better leverage for whatever you mean by comparison.
Z is the same for
same quasar. Same observer.
They should produce the same Z in different delta over.
But what you're doing here, you take 5 out of 134, yeah?
No, I didn't do anything. There are 5 systems for which 2 measurements published. I'm just comparing the 2 measurements. I have not done any measurement here. It's not my measurements.
No, but if you have 5 out of 134, then you would expect that 5, if you redo them, could be 3 sigma off. Yes.
I'm not worried about reading. This is not the point. The point is that there are inherent systematics. The point I'm trying to make is that there are inherent systematics involved in this. Which means that even when you do error analysis properly, you have to be careful. These systematics are involved.
Is there any
So these are all the 5 systems that okay, so there, it's not 1 5 out of 100.
No, it's 5 out of 143.
So there are 100 others that have the same comparison, just in case, or just.
Well, maybe Michael can explain that.
It's just 5 of our systems that we had. Five systems were observed twice by 2 different groups.
Okay, so
we actually analyzed 2 independent spectra, the same object, and these are the 2 cases that we get. Of course, we discussed these in the paper.
So I
won't comment on that.
In all 5 terms, the sign is different.
Why is the sign always like so?
I think the important point I'm not trying to push the point that there is. What one has to understand is that adding an L, it's important. They are very different in the following way. The number of lines used are different. The signal to noise may be different. So one has to be careful. That's what I'm saying. Signal to noise, other way around, depends on what is the error spectrum you use. What is the kind of errors per pixel? That's a signal to noise. It's very important to realize that you can, the same group with the same analysis technique, can come up with such numbers. This you have to remember. So it's important for us to realize that when you design an experiment, you better prepare to what kind of things you want to do. I will go through it one by one. Is there any questions on this? The next issue I want to address is that, again, it's an important issue. This is always a problem. Certain things you cannot simulate and explain. For example, the issue I want to address now is that what is the effect of having saturated bands? Whether you want to do blind fitting or you want to do the open fitting, where you want to see these things. Again, I'm going to address this issue because unfortunately we don't have all these 150 spectra available to us so that you can look at it and even redo the analysis. So I have to do these kind of things which are not very scientifically correct. I would say that rather I would go and do the fitting, but unfortunately it's not there. But if these things give us some guidelines into what we should do. Let me just go into this. Saturated lines are problems, so this I explained to you. So what we did is that for one set of what we call as previous loaded sample of head varies, there are about 29 points, for which actually if you go into this website, this is from Chris Churchill, he has put all the absorption lines. This exercise you can do. I don't have to do anything. So what you do is that you go and look at the systems where you see that whether these kind of saturated lines are present or not. If the saturated lines are present, you say that you remove it. So this exercise, what I did was I asked one of my colleagues, a theoretician in our institute, I gave the spectrum and asked him to say, like, you've come up with what are the systems you think are saturated. So this guy came up with six of them. Of course, you can go and do, the website is there, you can go and do as much as you want. These are the results. First of all the 29 points, if you take, sorry, all the 27 points, this is the result. This is 0.51 plus or minus 0.22. This is like 27 system. This is what is published. This is the first result from the group, which is what is being confirmed later by several data, 150 data points correctly. The red points are from the saturated system. Ideally, you would think the saturated points should be scattered everywhere because it's just adding random noise to it. So if I remove the five saturated points from the analysis, you can ask why. I say that for me, I think that saturated things should not be there. You remove the analysis, this is the result you get. This is 0.26 plus or minus 0.24. So it's clear that few systems, you are not having huge number of them. It's clearly few systems. How many of them? 5 out of 27, 20% of the systems, which has a physical meaning, which is saturated systems. These lines with saturated absorption, if you remove them, this is a bit of a shock to me. It should not happen. It should never have happened because saturated systems. Only thing I say is that you cannot define where is the component. What you mean is that you can be left, you can be right, you can do whatever you want. But it should introduce scatter rather than systematic shift. So I don't know what is the problem here, but one can see that removal of that alone makes a big difference. That means, I think for people who are interested to ask me why should one remove saturated systems from the analysis, you know that why it is.
This is still one sigma, so it's not statistically troubled.
No, one is not worried about one sigma or two sigma, but just I'm telling you that the values, it's not that it is scattered. It's not that if you remove them, if it was 0.5, I understand there is no systematic trend.
But so why you should remove them? I would rather expect that if the line is saturated, it should remain, but uncertainty in the proper treatment should be bigger.
Yes.
Because it's what you said, you don't know whether it's here or here,
yes,
but you think you have a line. So, and here we can see that they are statistically important.
Yes.
So
this I don't know.
So that's another question, because I would expect that this should remain.
Yes.
But if you blow up the arrow bars, it should.
Yeah,
it actually reduces their weight.
Michael, if you treat them properly, if you say that you in not a saturated line, you more or less well know where is the maximum, and if line is saturated, you don't know. That means that once you treat the line as saturated in some model, it just the result should be more uncertain, just because you don't know where you know not so accurate where maximum is. So in principle, that means that data with saturated line in general should be not that accurate. But on the other side, if you have not a saturated strong line, perhaps that means that the other reference line is weaker, and that means that you have a bigger noise. And when you compare a saturated line with a well-resolved line, you have problem with the stronger line, but not with the weaker line. Once you reduce the, if both are saturated, that's bad. If one is saturated, that means that if you reduce intensity, you have a good chance that the reference line, you compare these, is not so well presented, not with so good contrast, and you lose accuracy in the other line. So that means that.
So I think what you're saying is perfectly right, but.
Yeah.
But
in general, saturated light should not be removed. Just with the proper treatment, the saturation means a system, a certain uncertainty because of shape of light.
It's a term weight. Maybe Michael better answer.
Yeah. I'd rather actually bet.
Because
yeah.
It's a term
weight.
If it's a saturated light, do not contribute. You don't need any special dots. It just do not contribute.
So I don't think that you can. Bitterly remove a line.
If it's okay, I'd rather address this at the end and let him talk.
So this is why we decided to have, our approach was slightly different. We decided to have a systematic understanding of various quantities. For example, we want to confirm it with confirm multi-etal data with independent data analysis. This is our motivation for the GPS analysis. We said that we will devise some selection criteria that will ensure that the measurement of the accurate measurement of data for the alpha. So this is our approach. We don't fit all the lines. We don't go and fit all the systems in the sample. We have some criteria. How do you define the criteria? I'll explain in detail. But we decided we will avoid saturated systems. In fact, one of the interesting points about the saturated system, we can come back to here, because it's one. There are various ways of doing it. For example, if this line is saturated, you can say that I can look at these lines. This is a weaker transition. This defines me the profile, right? So this defines me the location of the components. But there you can it's interesting figure to look at. For example, you look here. Here there is an additional FE2 component, which is not seen. It is seen only in the stronger transitions. So the idea here is that you can locate these in a stronger transition, whereas this kind of saturated line in the weaker transition. But the problem comes when such a component occurs inside the saturated line.
Yeah, sure.
So if you gate your profile fitting code to the weaker lines to decide the locations of the components, you are going to miss out on the components which are going to have only present in the strong component. It's a very, very technical issue, and it has been discussed in Murphy et al. It's not that we are discussing it for the first time. It is there, and this is one of the reasons discussed in this paper to understand why there is a larger scatter, 1C, when you go to higher H2. You get it in the last lecture. When you are above H2, the scatter is much larger. And one of the explanations was given is that when you are trying to fit this weaker transition with a saturated transition, you end up into this. This is another technical thing on the story. Okay, let me go on. So what we did was, we went into the simulations to understand, first of all, there are two things involved. One is that selecting the absorption lines. The second thing is that doing this analysis. It's important for us to, first of all, when we start these things, it is important for us to convince ourselves that what you are doing is correct. So what we started with a single absorption line, single meaning single Gaussian absorption line. You put input delta alpha by alpha. You put some value of delta alpha by alpha and shift the lines in your simulation. Try to extract these lines by modeling. So basically what you do is that you run your minimization code and try to extract these values. And these are about, for each simulation, we are run about 35 to 40 cases. So you find 40 times you input some value, you change the noise spectrum, try to extract the values. The idea is to plot what is the input value and what is the extracted value. And this is the input value, this is the extracted value. And you see that this is the line which is connecting it. There are two things which are important. One is to understand that if you take a sample of cases, you look at what is the distribution of values you get around the mean. So this is something like a Gaussian kind of thing. So you can see like what is the width of this Gaussian. This tells you like what is the typical kind of, in a single system, when it is very clean, when you have a single absorption line, what is the kind of accuracy we are going to reach. The other way of saying is that this Gaussian width should be equal to a single uncertainty you will have. But you can complicate a bit by introducing multiple components. You can say that you take an absorption profile, put multiple components, and try to extract these things. So what we found is that as one goes into complicating this absorption profile, when you put two components, whose separations are much smaller than the width of individual components, we find that our code has problem in recovering these parameters uniquely. In fact, the other question you can ask is that you are putting redshift, you are putting column density. You can also ask the question whether you are getting back these parameters correctly. So what one finds is that systematically the errors in an individual measurement is going to go up once you start having this kind of absorption lines which are blended.
Well, the distribution is not even Gaussian in that case. That's just one of the points. And if you look at the errors of this distribution,
yes, this is the point, is that in some fraction of the systems, you may have something thrown out from your mean. There are possibilities that one can have something which is going away from the mean. It's true. If you complicate more, you will have this more tail system. So this is the effect of signal to noise, and this is like when you use signal to noise of 30 or when you use a signal to noise of 60, you can do the simulations and find out what is the recovery. So this is again the other interesting thing we worked out is that if you use weaker lines, you look at the weak absorption lines, for example, this kind of line which is rightly supposed to be the kind of thing, but you have this Poisson noise sitting on there. You find that what is the effect of it. You can see that when you start including weaker lines in your fit, the scatter becomes large.
What does mean to include weaker line? To include some observation which has only weaker line, or to say that you see from some clouds five lines, one is weak. Yes. So you mean the like.
So and the weak can be
a combination of weak and strong lines. Okay.
So you just go back to that point you had there. I don't think it should matter whether the scatter itself goes up. You need to look at the normalized scatter, don't you? So you need to normalize by the standard deviation, because if the scatter goes up, the standard deviation increases. That doesn't really so much, does it?
It's actually strange, because you say that if we add a not very accurate data, we increase uncertainty. I would expect if we include data with a large uncertainty, we will not much improve, but still, if we add a real piece of data, which does not contradict the rest.
Sorry,
if we have certain set of data, doesn't matter which, and if we include one more point, which does not contradict to the more accurate point. That means that if this point is very accurate, we will improve accuracy very much. If it is not very accurate with a big uncertainty, we will not improve accuracy. But usually when we add data, which is not very accurate because of low contrast, as we say, that means that we should have marginal changes, but still the uncertainty should be smaller, because if we add one more data point, we cannot be worse.
No, actually what is done here, I should clarify, I put the column density limit. It's not only one line you are going to see. When you put this limit, for example, every absorption line spectroscopy thing, you can define something like detection limit. For example, when you call a line a secure line and when it is not a secure line.
If it is not secure, that means that in quantitative description you have a big consultant. Okay, you have it.
Yeah.
But if you have 1 ± 1, 1.5 ± 1, and then 1 ± 100, or 10 ± 100, it could not make the average worse. Just if it has a very big uncertainty, it will nearly not change.
No, but what it means is that here, you set up ion lines, most of them will go down, because of which uncertainty in your measurement goes up. We are not talking of one line being in the low signal to noise. Signal to noise is same. I'm keep on reducing the column density, amount of ion which is present along the line of sight. And I'm looking at, see, if I put this column, several lines become weak. That's the idea.
I don't know. I can't understand that if you put one more points, but with a very big uncertainty.
Okay, final
result
will be
wrong.
I will show you this result as well, including the systems. It's not a problem. So, summary is that best constraints are obtained either from single component systems are well-resolved multiple component systems. So that's the idea here, is that if you have a well-resolved multiple component systems, each one of them behave like a single component, so you get a additional improvement in your signal to noise. So if going from signal to noise 30 to 70 will increase your measurement about a factor 2. This is 0.38 component. Better to avoid weak lines while extracting this. This is something to do with this detection threshold. So what is the data? Data is basically from ESO large program. So we looked at 18 press, right, high redshift quasars. The signal to noise is something between 60 and 80. The resolving power defined as lambda by delta lambda is of this order. And wavelength accuracy will be like 3 million angstroms across the time. There are about 50 magnesium systems detected along this pipeline. We use 23 of these systems. Okay. 15 are classified as weak because this FP2, only one transition of FP2 or two transitions are detected. So we don't use these systems, but in the paper you will see that analysis is performed, and as he pointed out, if you add these systems into the final result, they have very little effect. There are two DLAs and 10 saturated systems, either with no anchor or heavy blends, we have added them from the analysis. So these are the fits to the, this shows you the systems which you use. These are the fits, and this is the chi-square curve, and we will come back to the discussion further after I finish these things. This is our measurement. These are the data on 1 sigma error from test results. So the summary here is the following. So these are the values from Murphy et al. This is the value measured assuming that the wavelength of magnesium at higher redshift is identical to the wavelength of magnesium in the laboratory. If you allow for the extreme value of isotopic abundances, this is the value you will get because it affects the rest wavelength of magnesium.
Excuse me, can you repeat what are the red ones?
Red one is assuming that magnesium 26, I think most of the things in the one isotope, uh-huh. Instead of assuming the combination what you see in the laboratory.
Right.
Here we assume the laboratory combination.
So it's the isotope.
So actually, if you think of any combination between the isotopic abundance, it should be somewhere between these two. This is our measurement. If you use this isotopic argument, this is the value you get from our measurements. These are the individual measurements which was performed by Quest et al., Levchakov and Levchakov in different times. These are the values you get. And it's interesting to see that these are the same systems. This particular case is observed with slightly higher resolution. So I will move on to calculate template results, and I will come back to this discussion on what happened to these things further. Alkali doublets, basically we use, instead of magnesium and iron, we use only silicon doublets. These are our results. These blue points are our measurements from the same sample which was observed for the large program. And these are the measurements from K. Here are the summary. And this is our measurement in Chandetal. If you include measurement from K as well, there are 36 points and we have a limit, which is like 0.02 10^9. So this system, all the set of systems which we have for silicon, were de-analyzed by Holman, who is working with, he's in Germany, working with Quast in the beginning. This is our measurement versus Holman's curves. We can see that it nicely fall into this equality line. The results are more or less confirmed. We reanalyzed one of the systems by Quest et al. Our results match with this. This is the summary of our measurement based on US. And this summarizes various measurements we have. Now I come to this point, and this we discussed in great detail by Murphy. So this is a reanalysis of our systems using our initial parameters. But there is a slight difference between the spectra used. The spectra we have slightly larger error compared to what the error is being used in the case of reanalysis. Why we have larger error? We have larger error, and this is not a constant multiplicative error at each and every pixel. What we noticed was, if you take individual, it's not if you're thinking of each quasar spectra hours of time, something like equivalent of 20 hours time. So obviously you cannot observe in one night. And also these are observed in two different settings. So you are not going to do it in one setting for 5 hours or 6 hours, because there is a technical problem like cosmic ray sweeps. So you want to have an optimum exposure where you get optimum signal to noise in single exposure. You repeat it several times. Actually, this 20-hour data means like each individual exposure was 1.5 hours, something between 1 hour and 1.5 hours, taken over a period of 2 to 3 months. So what happens is that in individual spectra, the error can be obtained from this from the Poisson statistics itself. But when you look at individual spectrum, the final spectrum you see is the coordinate spectrum of all the spectra we observe. What we noticed was, due to various reasons, because seeing the size of the object which you see in the telescope was different nights, the effective signal to noise we get for the same exposure time was not accurate. So you can define two kinds of errors. For example, each pixel, you can bring all the spectra to a given value and look at, you can define mean value and the dispersions in the value. What we found was these values are not consistent with the value one obtained from the Poisson statistics at different pixels. So what we decided was, at each pixel we add quadratically these errors to these points which you get from the photon statistics itself. This is very well explained in our paper, because this we have to do. It is not that we did after fitting the lines and deciding that chi square is bad, we add the errors. No. Because individual pixels, we don't scale the errors. It's a very important point. If you have a chi square curve, scale the error by something. The curve will remain same, only the chi square value will go down. Here it is not the case. There are abnormal pixels where you see that the error coming from the scatter is much more. So this, because of which the errors are different. So before comparison, you have to remember that there is one quantity which is slightly different. But it is very intriguing to see that there are different ways of looking at it, right? Looking at this plot. What are our immediate responses? Immediate response is the following. There are two systems which you notice, if you look at it. There are two systems which has abnormal values. For example, this value of -4 ± 0.1, 4.8 ± 0.9. And one of the systems is what is being discussed in great detail. So the idea is that each one of them is something like a 4 sigma or 5 sigma detection compared to the mean which you define. So it's clear that there is something which we have to look at. So these two systems one has to carefully look at. Why there is a... So if I, for a moment, we'll come back to all these things in great detail. For a moment, if you ignore these points, you see that the values are something like the -0.19, 10 to the -5. Remember this value from -0.44 can go down to -0.19. The other interesting point to remember is that how many of the systems you actually see there is an overlap between. So some of you have already pointed out there are points in which you see the two measurements overlap, despite having different error spectra. Okay? So there are about 16 of them where we overlap. Our measurements are 0.03 into 10 to the plus or minus 0.09 into 10 to the minus 5. And the same measurement for Murphy et al. Something like that.
Why is there have to be uncertainty? You say that you added some additional source of uncertainty to pixels.
Yes. I think this uncertainty is...
I would expect opposite situation.
Yes.
So they should claim something more accurate than you.
Precisely this error is coming from 1 hour sigma weightage. And as pointed out, there are these two abnormal systems where we have a problem. Our measurements were much tighter than the new measurements. So that's the point. I will discuss this in detail when you
will discuss the smoothness of the chi-square curve you will.
Now, this will be one of the reasons for that, I think, the errors.
Yeah, but still, okay, let's assume that Michael did everything wrong, fine. But still, your curve should be smooth. It's not related to his analysis.
Correct.
He may be right or wrong, that's his problem. But your curve is not smooth, and that's your problem. Because you minimize the center functional,
yes,
and alpha, which should be smooth. If it is not smooth, then that may happen. It's a physical problem. That means your data is just not good for such analysis. That's
all. I'll just complete. I'll discuss these two systems in detail. Okay. I'll at least show you the profiles.
But I mean, it's not just a problem with two systems. It's the whole thing.
Yeah. Wait a minute, I think.
Okay.
So can I just ask about the first point there? Just because the individual systems give you something that's an order of magnitude larger than the final result, which can be an issue, because I can take 10,000 data points, all with an error, take a weighted mean, and then the weighted mean will be...
I think the question I'm asking is that we made a measurement, you are giving a measurement from the same data. I would like to see where is the deviation. This is, this is an immediate response. I just look at it and see these are the points one has to look at it carefully.
Okay.
This is what we have. What is the detailed response? Actually, we have to do two things. So we have to ask this question, like whether there are two issues which have been introduced. Is our code systematically pushing pi square curve towards zero? In the sense that you have minus 0.5 10 to the minus 5, this is the intrinsic value of delta alpha, we are given in nature. And you have a code which is preferentially pushing everything towards zero. This is very important, I think. The one question which is important. Second thing is that, do you underestimate the errors? For example, if you make error, if you have a process which does both, then it is the worst situation. So we have to see what is the case. What are the approaches one can take? We actually took, we can do two things. One is that you go back and check in your code. In fact, instead of doing this delta alpha by alpha as an external parameter and looking at the chi-square, you can actually include this into your coherence matrix and look at this, the way how error propagates within this. That is one way of addressing this. Other thing is to see like whether there is, what is causing this difference. The approach we took is to take this VP fit. This is the same code which is used for MIT. The idea is to find out, we use the same code, we use the same initial condition, we use the same spectra and same errors, and come back and see like what is the differences. And in this particular case, you can go system by system. Even though we published the velocity structure of the components, we have not published what is the initial value of column density, what is the initial value of V parameter, and what is the initial value of redshift dispropion. What is the initial value of column density and V parameter V input value? This we have not published in the paper. What one can ask is that you can ask this question. I input these parameters, the same parameter I put in this code. And now I want to see like what is the difference in the final results with this code as well as with our code. Not only you look at alpha, you also look at where is the redshift distribution, what is the, whether you match in redshifts or whether you match in the column densities. Like every parameter should match if it's an identical procedure.
Wouldn't that be more informative, though, to put in your best final values and then see whether you get a significant improvement in chi-square? So you put it, rather than putting your initial guesses, put in the actual final published values and then see whether you can find...
I think actually the point is that we have not put the final published values. This is why I say whatever we listed in the table are the initial guesses.
Okay.
So that's why we could do it. In fact, I can go back and put the best fitted values into this code one. I want to test it. It's better I do it exactly like the way we have done in the beginning. So till now we are not addressing the question of what is the exact value, but rather what we want to see is that we want to understand where is the problem. So I'll show you some of the, so we have done this, we looked at all the systems, we redid this VP fit. And to start with, I must say that like it was interesting exercise for us because I never used VP fit in my life, so it was first time I had to install it and like understanding. So still I'm understanding. So whatever I'm presenting is the, so we have looked at various chi-square curves and I'm giving you some examples of chi-square curves which we got. These are the original chi-square curves of some of the best cases we published. This is the chi-square curve we get now with the VP fit. Okay, I must say this curves, there is a slight difference between this and this. In our case, we have done only one iteration. That means we start once, curve is made and stop. We notice that in the case of VP fit, when you do this, we have bigger. So we said that we will iterate further. So there is a slight difference. We have not changed anything. This is the published spectra, published curves. These are the things which are redone. There are three error bars which are put. One is that this is the measurement, this is the new measurement now. This is the measurement, these open circles are the measurement given in Murphy et al. 2007. This is our original measurement. You can see that this is just a sample 7 systems for which we have this curve.
But why is the curve is not smooth in the long way?
No, actually, this is the same case here as well. In several cases, when you have lengths, we find that the curve is not smooth. So what is happening is that we have to iterate few times to get the smooth curve. This curve is obtained with few iterations. This we have not done. In fact, if I do this, for example, take the best fit point here and do that as the initial guess parameter and do this analysis again, I find that I get smooth curves. I'm not doing it now.
So it just means that you did not enough iteration.
This is our final analysis point, and this is the point which I just want to come back. These open squares are our original measurements. These filled points are the new measurement which we have done now. This is for 21 points. We have two systems for which we have problems. I'll show you this. So this is the result for the 21 points. Wait, let me do this.
What's the chance though that your result will be that consistent with zero? I mean, it's, you know, very much within one standard deviation, but surely the chance that you get that close to zero with very small amounts.
Somewhat measurable.
Well, it's very statistics after the fact.
Yes,
exactly. That doesn't make any sense. But from your 2003, was it, or 4, how many systems did you have then?
23.
But it's, okay, this is without this.
So it's 21 or 23?
These are the two systems for which we have problems. And just instead of showing the chi-square curve, I thought it would be better to show the systems itself. Definitely, we have problem with our code in dealing with these kind of lines. And you saw this one of these chi-square curves which are going like this. There is a difference between the way you can do the fitting. For example, you can define that the component structure can come from one of these weaker lines, and you say that you can use this magnesium line to follow that. Unfortunately, this is the one of the saturated, is the only saturated system which went into the sample. It went in mainly because you think that this other transition is okay. In this system, we have a problem, but this is with our own parameters, initial parameters, whatever we give. If you allow for additional parameters, for example, if you put main thing comes from this point actually. If you look at these two points, so if you put additional component here, again, the results come back to whatever we had originally. There is another main difference is that if you look at the initial points, look at where the values converge. We find that redshifts are different, velocity dispersions are different, column densities are different. And it's more weighted towards, they are all giving weightage by these components. So it's not clear whether there are hidden absorption profiles here, which is not seen in this, so that's the point which we don't know. This system is being analyzed carefully. This is another system. These two systems, we don't have a clear idea that what is causing the fluctuations. But we can clearly see that in our code, when it runs, we can look at the parameters and what it has. It has problems, because each run, after each value, suppose you are here, next time when we start, we actually start from our initial guess parameter. We don't start from this parameter, what is the best parameter you get here. So what we find is that if you change the wavelength small, you find that the degeneracies become very large. These two points do not have these smooth values of column densities and d parameters. So what it happens is that in the code, it is actually taking a excursion into the other parameter space as well. This is why you see this kind of strong wiggles in the systems. This is under analysis, and hopefully we will be able to use this result.
Could you just go back to the value you had from the previous slide? So 0.14, that's more than twice the error you had before.
Exactly twice, yeah. So this is one thing which we see now, the error is, it's clear that we have underestimated the error in the beginning. Whatever reports we have, it could be due to the inclusion of these components which has wiggles.
So that means that you are more or less agree with Michael that how you underestimate uncertainty. You approximately agree with his uncertainty, and you agree that you had not smooth behavior, which was bad because you stopped iteration somewhere or because you have certain instability. But you don't agree on the findings. And this instability, again, So is it caused by more parameter, like an additional line in saturation?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's clear, a chance for instability, yeah, if you have line. But in this case, I don't know, you should somehow manage to have a big uncertainty, because this is a specific line which is enter only one spectrum, which nearly make it unuseful, because you can choose any parameter. So in your procedure, when you like to remove lines, you just would remove this line. So
okay, let me just summarize this thing. I can be a bit more interesting. This is the result from Murphy et al. This is our results, which I said. This is our whatever we call results from 21. But I think now we will have a full reanalysis of these systems plus several other systems soon. I just also put something which may be slightly controversial, which need not be a thing. We were told in one of the meetings, several of the meetings, independent reanalysis by Murphy and company give these kind of values for the systems that are these 23 systems which are exactly identical, probably with not our structures, it is with different structures, velocity structure, this was the value, this was then the total number of systems. So it seems that at least at that time, the preliminary analysis were consistent with what we have been saying. But now it seems things are under, maybe with 100 systems, we will know that what it is. But this I cannot quote because this is not a published result. This was presented in some of the conferences.
Can I just interrupt there? I have no idea what those volunteer results are. I have no idea, honestly. I just do not know what you're talking about there. The reanalysis we found just after that meeting, had a big preliminary thing across that slide in that talk. And we found miscalibrations in those spectra, because we'd reproduced them, of course, so, with the new pipeline. So that's why. But I don't actually know what those two are. I'm sorry, I risked that. But I won't interrupt.
So I think this point, this is just one clarification, nothing more than that. So I will just to put you in perspective, this is very obvious that there is a controversy or whatever, there is a disagreement between observation and studies between two different groups. So you will be thinking that it's such a simple exercise, why should one disagree on? There is a history to these quasar absorption lines. It's not that it's the first time one is facing with the problem of who knows how profile fitting much better than the other. This issue is there.
I just want to ask, can you explain the parts of Michael's curves which have this scatter? You know, there were certain parts on the redshift curve which had excess scatter on. Now, if you did remove them, you could get to have a smaller error. I don't know if you could. You could get a better result, maybe. Is that? Can you explain that?
We don't see the scatter now. Actually, with our, it may be interesting to see with our nice thing. We don't have this.
This is our reanalysis. A couple of Michael's curves had these areas where there was excess scatter compared to the error bars.
In the original KEK analysis?
Oh, there was that. No, there was two, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was the KEK analysis.
So KEK analysis, I think they have discussed this in detail. What could
but
be
they have 400 points, so should be certain scatters. The question whether it's big or not, you should estimate.
Well,
that's
because there's not
square.
A systematic effect.
I think there are two, three pages of this written in the paper.
Really, Michael can answer it. There is some issue which.
Well, as I explained, there are some high redshift absorption systems where we see a high contrast between the lines. Yeah. I mean, very strong lines and very weak lines. I'll get back to Serena's point about earlier about the magnesium too, where we don't see that effect and where it is saturated. That's a separate issue. In those cases which remain to which still have high scatter, we don't see any problems. And we have no reason for throwing them out.
Oh, I just
any
mean
that we
have
to suspend any other points,
you have 30% more than one.
I agree,
signal,
I agree.
So that's not a problem.
No, well, it looks like a problem because you have some expectation that the scatter should be the same.
You should present square and say,
but we did not remove them just because they look suspicious in the final plot. We simply say, well, we've looked at those in detail, we cannot see any problems with them.
No, The point is, if there's an extra systematic effect, you can't really take away the mean and the mean.
But you always said that it's too much effective because
we don't have
to create one statistically, so there's no choice to avoid that.
This is why we make a bin plot so that you can see that that isn't such a
big deal. I realize that, but I'm just.
That's why they like to have so many points, because they have unknown systematics, which is should depend on the system, and an average should be zero, but in any particular point, it would have
also,
just average, anything.
No, also there is a website procedure. For example, if few points, you know that when you do statistics also, the best way of getting is that you can do clipping. For example, you measure the mean, you measure the sigma, and you say that I want to remove points above some sigma. Because this is usually done, this is how spectra
right.
are combined. So this is how things
wrong.
Are done.
That's wrong.
It's
you shouldn't remove information. If you believe that they are a mistake, you should explain why. If you believe that there's a certain probability that you have some crazy, huge systematic effect, okay, you should find a way to estimate that. And if you say that it matches the probability that one per 100 have such a systematic effect, which looks like 5 sigma for systematic reasons, it's also fine. But you should do some quantitative reason to treat this point somehow. Maybe saying that you have not a Gaussian law just because you have probability for systematic effects and
but
for lines it could be one in one.
Yeah, but the systematics, if you define a priori what is your selection, you don't see what is the
point. No, not selection, because in general, you can have a overlap of two completely independent lines by chance. So
systematic
is always present somehow.
No, that we know. I think this systematic is easy to do.
Okay, maybe any crazy thing that somebody just forgot to switch on or switch off something when this line was measuring.
Okay. Just to put you in perspective that work profile fitting and disagreements are common. It's not that this is the first time one is seeing. First time, I think if you are a person who keeps going to the Poisson absorption line meeting, not to alpha variations, different stages in life, people have criticized different people for how a profile is done, how it should be done, because inherently they're systematics. The first problem such was N versus V in the IGM in the early 90s. And I think every conference you go in 1990s, you will find that when people actually, they found that in the equilibrium medium, the width of the line and the amount of gas which is present, they are correlated. Width, if you associate to temperature of the gas, there seems to be a density-temperature relation like your equation of state. It was a big controversy. First time when people did a very, some set of people actually they choose good lines to do this exercise. Then they performed another set of people who fit everything. There was a big, big debate how it should be done. This got sorted out. By theory, basically theoreticians say that there should be equation of state in the intergalactic medium because the density is so low, there is absolutely no recombination. Only cooling you have is adiabatic cooling. If you put that in, since adiabatic cooling depends on density, you know that there is a density to cooling relation. This particular issue was there for 5 years. Same system, same quasar was fitted by three different groups. This problem was sorted out by theoretical theory. The second problem, which all of you will know if you have done cosmology, what is the omega of beryllium from deuterium abundance? This is another issue. You measure D1 and H1, and the ratios will give you the omega beryllium. It went on and on. In fact, it was so spectacular for a same system, same quasar, 16 different papers were written with 16 different values. Again, it's something to do with how you do the fitting. It got sorted out. And the WMAP data came and said that this is your omega variant.
You comment due to that abundance of Lixman, which was discussed in talk by Victor, which is disagreeing with predictions. Do you think that it could be some big systematical?
So actually, I was mistaken by which lithium 6 thing. Actually, there is again, lithium 6 is getting into some controversy the way we fit the lines.
Getting back to deuterium, there is a large scatter in the data, right?
Not so large now, actually. It's only about 1.3 sigma, more like 1.3 times the scatter.
But just how secure is determination of lithium abundance? I think it's lithium 7, which produces this statement that.
I don't know about it. Maybe we'll discuss after this talk. Maybe it's because that will take us away from what I want to say. Basically, this omega v actually more or less we settled when we have this WMAP measurement. What do you think of alpha? I would think that one way of settling it is really to have people agree on which system to spin, to take as many systems as you want, observe with different telescopes. Maybe you should have a conference with open mind, actually go and fit the lines. Maybe you should have a workshop fitting the lines, and maybe you will be able to convert into what is, we can exchange data, we can look at it. Not only it will allow you to converge onto a number, it will also allow you to make sure that the systematics are all incorporated very well. Of course, this will be very difficult given the situation that we are from different parts of the world. We have our own commitments to do various things. It may be possible that if analysis by a new group, basically a new group of people, pick up this data, this is available in the world, to pick it up and do this. Again, since several things have been done, new group, when they want to grow, they will have resistance. But you should try. I think it's important for somebody to actually come up and try this thing on their own. The other possibility, which is more feasible, this is what may happen. These two things are going to be difficult. What will happen is that you try to get this constraint from different independent observations. Instead of alpha, you look at other things. Instead of using magnesium, you look at something else, and these things, and so on. So I will just take 5 more minutes. I am taking much more than what I want to do. I will take 5 more minutes in this, what are the things we are doing with respect to getting from independent constraints. Basically, you can use molecular hydrogen and deuterated molecular hydrogen transition to fix mu. But you have to remember, these lines are going to be inside the Langmuir alpha forest. So you saw the pictures, Langmuir alpha forest, meaning that there's a region which is contaminated by a huge number of intergalactic hydrogen absorptions. So it's going to be much more trickier. I think as long as people are putting upper limits, there will be absolutely no problem. The day somebody comes up and says that they have 5 sigma detection, you will find that the controversy is going to be much more dominant, because the systematics one is going to expect is going to be much more. And the other thing which we notice, when you do astrophysics, you notice that the different J levels, this molecular hydrogen you detect in different rotational levels. And what we find is that there is systematic property differences between different J levels. It seems that molecular hydrogen is not originating in different J levels, need not originate from the same physical locations. This has been seen in some of the things in our interstellar medium, but this is going to be a bit of a tricky issue. But our contribution here is that we are feeding the community with the new H2 systems. That's what I would say. The other thing is the joint constraint on electron to proton mass ratio, alpha, and G factor can be obtained from 21 centimeter absorption systems. Actually, what you do is that you would have 21 centimeter absorption, you look at corresponding metal line absorption, and you choose the line which is insensitive to the variation in alpha, so that you know what is the redshift of this system. Then you say that knowing the redshift of the system, knowing the redshift you measure from the 21 centimeter line, you try to see like whether there is variation in the joint constraint.
Wait, so wait, what is the collision time of hydrogen for which you study?
It's huge.
But just a number, minutes, seconds, years.
I think collisions are, to start with, collisions for this transition is
Just what is collision time?
Between hydrogen atom?
Yeah.
In the interstellar medium, it is about 10 to 7 years.
10 to 7 years?
Yes. For one particle per cc, if you take. So it's very rare.
Yeah.
And the mean free path, I think mean free path is easy number to remember. Mean free path is moving with a 10 kilometer per second. The distance is between us and sun. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of. So this is one issue, which how to identify the corresponding component. The other thing is the radio sources are usually complex. The optical source is an accretion disk. You know that this is where the UV radiation is coming from. The sizes is known. It's like, you can think of like 10 to the 13 or 10 to the 14 centimeters. Whereas the radio emission can come from 10 to the 17 or 10 to the 18. So one has to be very, you will be seeing one is a sort of a beam, and maybe a point. This systematics will be there. But what is more important is that even though they are going to provide nice constraint, both of them are very rare. It's hardly you detect them like magnesium systems. Every third quasar will show you a strong magnesium system to work with, whereas you are not going to get these things and these things very easily. You have to really work hard. So I will finish with 2 slides, which basically you will hear about our constraints from Alexander tomorrow. But the basic idea of H2 survey I will summarize. We looked at 90 DLS. This is a strong absorption systems. along the line of sight to quasar, and we search for molecular hydrogen. For each object, we have to spend about 2 to 4 hours. You can see like how much hours of VLT time is gone into detecting these objects. We get this kind of spectral resolution, this kind of signal to noise. We have now about 17 systems. And you see that molecular, this new variation measurements, now okay, up to now people use about 3 systems. The problem is that even though we have 17 systems, only a few systems are of use for this analysis. Because we need large number of lamps, we need good signal to noise. Again, we don't want to go on fitting these lamps without understanding these complexities involved. So we have now 1 detection of carbon monoxide. This is the first thing after several years of search, and 2 detections of SGN. Just skip this and come to the other one. This is using 21 centimeter absorption lines. What is our contribution to it? We have been doing a systematic survey with the Giant Microwave Radio Telescope in India. So we started with something like 60,000 quasars in SGSS. They look for special kind of objects which will produce 21 centimeter absorption based on some physical conditions. You just know that gas should be neutral so that H1 should be present, blah, blah. And this redshift range is chosen. There are about 2,900 sources in this redshift range. We want this source to be ready at all because we are going to look at the absorption front of them. We narrow down to something like 37 systems starting from 60,000 quasars. Each system is observed about 8 to 16 hours with GMRT. We have roughly about 14 hours observing time. We have just completed this survey. And we have about 9 new detections. 5 of the systems are showing in front of radio sources that are compact at milliarcsecond scale. Fortunately for us, out of 9, 5 systems are in front of quasars, where both optical and radio may be postspatial because we don't resolve the radio source even at milliarcsecond scale resolution. This is the team of people which are involved. And one of them is very interesting, very, very good, but the problem is it shows proper motion in the sense that there is one blob of synchrotron emitting gas moving with an apparent velocity of something like 15 C. That means like with time it keep on moving. This is not good for us because the time profile is going to change as a function of time. Just to show you that this is, just to give you the idea that how difficult it is, we have 9 systems. Before we start this thing, there are only 4 systems known redshift above 1. So this is a major quantum jump as far as 21 centimeter absorption is concerned. For one of these guys, we caught hold of a K spectrum. This is a sample swarm. And you can see the quality of the data. And this is your 21 centimeter absorption, which is unresolved at 3.9 kilometers per second resolution. Actually, since these are new detections with our telescope, you can go to any resolution you want. This is at a resolution of 1 kilometer per second, roughly. And you see that this is still unresolved. This is a very nice system for which we can accurately measure the 21 centimeter absorption ratio. However, the K spectrum is not that good. For the first order, we can use it. You use this and you can find out the centroid by fitting components. I will not say that this is going to be our final measurement, because it just gives you a tentative idea of what kind of sensitivity you can reach even with a moderate resolution, moderate signal to noise ratio spectrum. And this is the kind of value you get, delta x by x is something like this. With one system, if you look at it, if you convert it into these values, you are reaching 0.15 10 to the minus 6 in alpha if other quantities are not varying. This is from one system. And this is beautiful because if this line were here, we would be completely confused. Suppose, imagine this absorption line is here. I have to decide which of the component is going to be corresponding to my 21 centimeter absorption. Because depending upon my choice, my constant will vary more or less, because I'm going to compare this redshift with the redshift of these components. So this is a good system for which one can do. In fact, if you increase the resolution a bit, you will be able to reach much better sensitivity. And this, we already got time in VLT, and we will be able to increase the signal to noise by a factor of 3. We will have a resolution which is 1.5 times better, and hope to have a limit which is reasonable for comparing with different data sets. So other molecular, some people said about OH and all, I just put kind of a table where it gives you an idea of what kind of things one has. So these are different complex molecules by Murphy. This is based on OH lines from 3 systems now. These are the constraints one gets on delta alpha by alpha, assuming other constants are not varying. Discussion. So we believe within our measurement uncertainty, there is no variation of any fundamental constant with VLT data. But one thing which we keep forgetting, now that we are discussing about KEK versus VLT, etc., we completely forgot about one issue. If there is a change in the isotopic abundances, even we were saying there is a variation. So it's important for us to understand the effect of many multiplied methods. What is the effect of isotopes in the many multiplied methods? So what we want is that maybe we should go for very high resolution spectra of some of the bright quasars. We show this absorption line. Other thing which is beyond our thinking now, because we are still sorting out problems with Hope profile, one has to see what about this absorption being produced by non-Hope profile. For example, if it's a